meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 1, Overall Process Support Outreach Issue, held on the 31st of January, 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room only. So if you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? And I do note Shoin Ojedeji is on audio only. Anyone else? Hearing no further names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for a recording purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our co-chair, Sarah Bakke. Please begin.
Thank you, and thank you all for joining us today for this call. This is Sarah Bakke, for the record. And today, as normal, we want to check and see if anyone has update slides, I think, first off. And then we'll go into the agenda. So if you have any updates, please raise your hand. Not seeing any. All right. So our agenda for today is I thought we would do a recap of the outcomes from our last call on January 10th. And then we're going to discuss new topics being systems and communications. And then hopefully we'll have a few minutes to touch on the accreditation program and then any other business. I will note that we did put out a follow-up email right after our call on January 10th regarding what was discussed and some input that was received from the working group on that day regarding application queuing, application submission period, and the application fees and variable fees. We did not receive any feedback on that, so if you do have feedback, either provide it today or if you're more comfortable so on the list, please do. But to that event extent, I'm not sure if everyone is able to scroll through these slides or if I need to do it in order for you to see. Staff, could you let me know? I see Emily typing.
And Sarah, at this time, everyone can scroll themselves.
Okay, great. Great, thank you. Before we get into it, I guess you can see our schedule of topics and where we are just a little bit behind in all of our topics and trying to get caught up, hopefully today, and then dive in more in February into the application guidebook. So that is where we are as far as our schedule. And then I will pass it over to Krista to let her do a quick review of our topics from our last meeting. So, Krista?
Thanks, Sarah. It's Krista for the record. Based on the January 10th call, and this is also in the email that we sent out, we had some outcomes that the lottery style was the way to go. We didn't have any objections to it. Taking a step back, the goal is just simply to deliberate on a different application processing methodologies. So, as I just mentioned, the January 10th call, we had agreement on the lottery style and no objections. We didn't receive any feedback on any one not liking that outcome, I guess you could say. And we didn't receive any other insight or feedback on further discussion questions. So I think we'll just quickly kind of move on, and we'll recirculate it, but if anyone wants to add any comments now to the further discussion items, please raise your hand or maybe add some, insight into the chat. Sorry, I see Jeff's comment on the lottery, and I think, Steve, you mentioned that somewhere as well, too, on the terminology there, and I think I missed to go back to pull it up, but whether we call it a lottery or a randomization process or some other term, I don't think that's going to change the essence of where we're going with this application queuing at this time. So would anyone like to add to further discussion items on application queuing? Jeff, I see your hand.
Yeah, thanks. So, Jeff Newman, in the last round, around 2012, there was a decision made by the board to prioritize IDN application in the process. So they queued randomized all the IDN applications first, and then made those number like 1 through 100 and whatever, and then they randomized the non IDN applications and put them in at like 121 through the end. The question is whether, and actually they did it in two parts, I think. Someone could correct me if I'm wrong. I think there was a choice that you could enter the randomization process voluntarily or not. If you wanted to enter the randomization process, you paid like $100, I think it was a $100 fee, and what they did is they randomized the IDN applications that elected to be in the randomization process first, and that was numbers 1 through 121, or whatever it went up to, and then they randomized the ASCII applications that wanted to be in the lottery, that cared about being first, and that was up to like 1,000 whatever. Then they put in the IDN, they randomized the IDN applications that didn't want to be in the lottery, followed by the ASCII applications that didn't want to be in the lottery. So I think there was like four groups. We probably should talk about that at this point as to whether we still believe there should be some priority on IDNs or not, since that was a decision made by the ICANN board prior to the lottery process.
Just for the record, I guess the question is, I'm assuming, but please correct me if I'm wrong, that there was a prioritization given to the IDNs in order to facilitate, I guess, their entrance into the marketplace before others and providing them with a bit of a leeway into that. Is that correct? Or is my understanding correct?
Yes, that's correct. They wanted to, there was definitely some demand at the time for IDNs, at least political, I'll say political demand, not necessarily consumer demand. And I know that, well, there's probably people here on this list that were part of the original IDN launches that, you know, may have, launched quickly, but not necessarily had consumer demand at the time. So, yes, at the time, there was a political desire to have IDNs introduced into the marketplace first, because also at the time, ccTLDs were being introduced, sorry, the IDN version of the ccTLDs were being released at the same time. So that was unique circumstances, but we should still opine on whether we should continue that practice or specifically make a recommendation of whether we do not want that process going forward.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. Great point. It's crucial for the record again. Does anyone else want to give an opinion on that, or would we like to maybe vote on that? Or, oh, sorry, Steve, I see you have your hand up and I missed it.
Thanks, Krista. This is Steve Chan from staff, and I just wanted to note, and it's preliminary at this point, but there is a question that's been added to the community comment too, draft questions related to that topic, about whether or not certain subgroups or applicants or application types should be moved to the front of the queue. So whether or not that draft question makes it into the final version or not is up in the air at this point, but I just wanted to note that at this point, there is a draft question there, so we might get assistance from the community in answering that question. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. Donna?
Thanks, Krista. Donna Austin from Newstar. I think what might help in whether for any future rounds, whether we think prioritization of IDNs or perhaps community applicants are worth pursuing is, we do have some information now that would be useful, I think, in considering whether the putting IDNs at the front of the pack was actually a worthwhile effort. I think the reality is that even though the IDNs did receive prioritization in the draw, that wasn't necessarily used by those applicants in the sense that they didn't push forward quickly to delegation or actually getting out into the marketplace. So it would be probably helpful just to gather some data on whether those applicants that actually received prioritization as a result of the draw actually took full advantage of that, because I don't know that it was necessarily the case that they did. So I think it might be worthwhile just reviewing the data on when those IDN applicants actually proceeded to delegation and made it to the marketplace. Thanks.
Yes, Krista. Donna, I think that's a great point. Maybe for the next call we'll try to pull up some data on perhaps their numbers and how long it took them to delegate or something similar like that, so we can maybe provide a better or have better insight into it before we actually, move forward and decide on what the best way is. And then additionally, as per Steve's comment, it's already out there as well to figure out the demand going forward and if it makes sense. Does anyone else want to add their comments to this, or are we okay gathering the data and then doing it on the next call? Okay, seeing no comments, we'll prepare to, or we'll try to get the data for the next call and proceed on that basis. Moving to the next topic, which is the application submission period. The goal is to provide the new GTLD program continues as round basis. The application submission window length was warrant additional debate to determine if a proper amount of time taken into account any recommended changes to the program that may simplify or complicate the application submission period. On the January 10th call, it was agreed upon that the initial period of 3 months seemed adequate, and then any other subsequent periods would be 2 months. And there was discussion around ensuring that the communication leading up to this time is obviously different from when the window is open versus closed. But if anyone has any other information or insight that they would like to add now, so we can include it in the, the follow-up email, now would be a great time. Silence. Great, isn't it? So, okay, there's no comments going on that. We'll just continue to plow through here. Next topic.
Jeff has a hand up.
Sorry, thank you. Go ahead, Jeff.
Thanks. I can't handle quiet silence. You're referring here to the communications period beforehand. I think we should, even if we don't come to any kind of conclusion here, we should talk about the communication period for the first round or whatever application window, first application window as opposed to subsequent communication periods. I would think that the communication period for the first application window would be longer than for subsequent ones. And for subsequent ones, if there is some sort of regular process, and that's being worked on by, or will be worked on by the draft, one of the drafting teams we're creating from the overarching issues. But let's say they agree on something like like two application windows a year, and it's predictable. That the communications period for that may or could overlap with other things that are going on. So I think what we do is we push that issue off until we get some work product from the overarching drafting committee on that topic, and then kind of put the communications period in line with whatever they come up with. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. I agree, and I think it also ties into a couple other topics as in making sure that there's enough lead-up time, especially in that first of the next round, if you want to call it that. So, agreed. Moving on to the next topic, which is the application fees. And it's hard to make progress on this one, so I have a couple of different, I guess, points. One is we should agree on an invoicing system. That one seems pretty simple to move ahead with or not. We can just simply vote on that. And the current method on is cost recovery. And so far, my personal views I've refrained from stating anything, but felt like I should actually say my point of view at this point. So if you go to the next slide on application fees, and despite us not having any information on the current methodology and how the costs were calculated and the outcome of that, because we have no insight into this black box, I think we should actually consider that the differences in costs are very different, I think, despite not having the number. So therefore, I somehow think that we should look at the costing methodology. And if at the end there's no great difference, then fine. But my gut instinct tells me that the cost between, say, a restricted application versus a brand or an open or community are going to be very different. And to say that we're okay just saying it's $185,000 flat fee regardless of the type of application, I personally have an issue with, because it doesn't make sense from my perspective. So if the working group disagrees with my point of view, I'm okay with that, but I felt like I at least had to state my own personal perspective on it. So if anyone has any comments or wants to provide any insight, it'd be great. Donna, go ahead.
Thanks, Krista. Donna Oster from Newstar. I don't necessarily have a problem with what you're suggesting, but one of the things that strikes me as we move through this process is that we probably have a few fundamental conversations that we have to have, and one of them surrounds categories. And if we agree, or, you know, where we end up on the category discussion might influence this conversation, also a conversation that's happening in the legal working group about, you know, I understand there's a discussion about different types of registry agreements depending on the type of category. So I think, you know, to some extent we need to have that fundamental conversation about categories in order to have this conversation that you're suggesting. I don't know that I agree that there will be differences in, you know, the time and effort that is required for the different types of applications, but you're right. I mean, we won't know that unless we do the research into it. But I do have a, I think what you need to factor into any application fee is that what you're applying for here is unique. And there is, and there should be a cost associated with a piece of real estate on the internet. So I would like to just, you know, make sure that that element is discussed and factored into any application fee as well. And also the fact that, and I know there's disagreement with others in this group about this, but, you know, 185 was the fee for the last round. And from my perspective, I think that from an equity or fairness perspective, that should hold some weight in any future discussion for subsequent application fees. Thanks, Krista.
Thanks, Donna. Jeff?
Yeah, thanks. Anna just brought up a point about fairness, and this is Jeff Newman. I'll address that first and then go to what I was originally. I'm not sure that we should give any weight to the fact that the applicant last round paid $185,000. I think if you look back, the .biz's of the world that were approved in 2001 paid a higher fee than those that got approved in 2005, which were all lower than what happened in 2012. So I think we should decide on what our core methodology is going to be, whether it's cost recovery or cost recovery plus make sure that there's some sort of minimum, as Donna said, because there's a place, because you're buying a place on the real estate on the internet. So if you want to give value to that and make sure that you keep out those that may not be as serious, you could establish some sort of minimum if it turns out that the cost recovery is not too high or high enough. The other point is that we could, you know, and I know we'll talk about potentially an accreditation or approval process or whatever it's now being called, but even putting that aside, whether it's pre-approval or later approval, if we could get agreement from the group that a registry back-end provider would only need to get evaluated once, unless there were some unique aspects for every application, you could then eliminate the technical evaluation from every other application, potentially just making the RSP pay for the evaluation as opposed to the front-end applicant. Again, whether it's an official program, we won't touch that right now, but it seems to me to be a waste of resources and money to have to review the same RSP for the same type of application 300 times in some examples. So I think that's also something we should consider.
Thanks, Jeff. I fully agree. And, you know, in its simplest form, there's a lot of repetition and efficiency that can be gained in, I think, a bunch of the processes. And even looking at the different types of applicants and applications just kind of adds, I think, to my point that I still think we still need the information in the costing methodology to be able to at least go forward. And being that we don't have any insight into the cost from the prior ones, it's the least we can do going forward, and I think it's only the we need to do it to be prudent. So I'm not sure if we're agreeing with that point of view, or are we saying we want to just say it's cost recovery plus a minimum, or we wait until we have a matrix of the different applications, or we say we want to kind of move forward with on the basis of cost recovery plus a minimum depending on the different applications that come out of the application matrix, if I'm making any sense whatsoever. I'm trying to read the chat as well.
I was going to say, there's been some good discussion in the chat, Krista, if you want me to read through it.
Sure.
Jim commented, when does cost recovery from previous round stop and recovery from the next procedure round start? Sorry, my chat is scrolling on me. Where'd it go? Phil made comment plus one Donna, so we have two application fee elements, a fixed price and variable cost plus question mark. Jeff Newman, correct, I don't think what groups paid in the first round should have any weight. Jeff continued, I didn't have any weight in the 2005 round or the 2012 round. John Nevitt noted that it went up. And then Donna said, I think the same applies with regard to what financial information is required, i.e., if there is no requirement for a COI. And then Jeff noted, technically, the first TLDs paid nothing, but the 2000 round did not argue for parity. And then Jim has noted, I think we need to ask ICANN why they insisted on evaluating RSP over and over and see if those reasons still stand. We can make all the arguments we want, but if ICANN Legal says that we did it for liability prevention reasons, I don't think our outcome will change that. And then Jeff noted at Jim, if you read the implementation plan, they did not indicate that they did that for any liability reasons. John Nevitt agreed with Donna that the $185,000 should have some weight. And Jeff noted, in fact, I believe their input was the opposite, and then went on to say, sorry, I meant that ICANN implementation review. So, very good discussion.
Thanks, Sarah. It's Krista for the record. So maybe I'll put that on the email that will be distributed to everyone, and then perhaps in the meantime, we can decide whether or not, I know it sounds, well, we can decide whether we agree that there should be an invoicing system. So, and that's because one of the feedback was a lack of invoices were a challenge, and the solution could just simply be ICANN implement an automatic system for invoice creation where the invoice is sent to the contact email based on process triggers. So I guess I'll put this out to vote now so we can perhaps just finish that one off. So for all of those in favor, could you please do the little check mark on agree in the Adobe chat room? So we have one person agreeing. John, need more explanation. So hold on. Let me just pull the original document. So the background was is that there were some issues around the confusion of invoicing and not sure on when items had to be paid. I'm trying to find a document. Sorry, do you have that in front of you? You can just read it out quickly.
Can we go back one slide on the PowerPoint so people can actually see the, maybe that helps. regarding the lack of invoices.
Sorry, I'm trying to find the document so I can read it out. Of course, we can't find it quick enough. So maybe we'll circle back. I don't want to hold everyone up and waste everyone's time while I try to find the document so I can read it to everyone. So we'll go to the next topic, and time permitting, we'll come back. Or, again, I'll recirculate it on the email list, and hopefully we can move forward on that on the next call. So the next topic is variable fees, and we're kind of just talked about it through the application fees. So I don't think there's really a whole lot we can do there. And again, we're looking at the vote on the lack of invoices was a challenge. So I'm reading the chat. Steve says, or make it available on request. I recall maybe incorrectly someone saying that having an invoice is actually problematic. And Jeff says, many big companies have rules that they can only pay after receiving a valid invoice. And that's what the document is saying. The document is saying that there was issues with the companies paying the amounts in the process because they weren't provided with an invoice. And the suggestion was that if they received an invoice, somehow it would be easier for them to pay and decrease the amount of delay. Regardless, I won't hold it up, and unfortunately I can't find the document quick enough. So I'll do that through the email, and we'll slide into – oh, sorry – Trang, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Krista. This is Trang. With regards to invoices, ICANN has some challenges with our ability to actually invoice for the application fee in this first round. It's an area where we could look at for the next round. I know it caused some issues for some of the applicants, and you know, for us, in terms of processing the two separate payments, the $5,000 in initial payment, as well as the remaining $180,000 payment, problematic as well. So certainly there were some learnings around that that we could apply to the next round to make the process a little bit smoother, but agree that this was an area of challenge. Thanks.
Thanks, John. So, Yasmin states, applicants that needed a statement invoice, generally larger companies and governments had to request such from ICANN for the $185,000, and ICANN eventually provided something. So, regardless, I won't hold us up any further, and let's move into a new topic, which is systems. And Sarah, I'll ask you to I'll turn it over to you, unless you want me to give up the get some background.
Thank you, Krista. I'll go ahead and take over.
Perfect.
So our new topic today is systems, at least one of them. I provided just a brief summary here in this slide, and I will first have a staff, I think, was going to provide a little bit of extra flavor. Emily, do you want to do that before or after we read through this?
Thank you. Thanks, Sarah. Can you hear me okay? This is Emily from staff.
I can.
Perfect. Yeah, I'm happy to just provide a little bit of context for the topic. It's something that staff is trying to do a little bit more of as we introduce new topics as a bit of a level setting so that everyone has the background that they need on the topic as we start to dive into deliberations. So this all comes right from the issue report, and it's just a brief summary. So we encourage everyone, of course, to go back to the issue report and read the full topic summary as well. So starting with systems, a little bit of background. There wasn't any guidance specifically related to technical systems in the 2007 final report. So this is sort of a new topic for the working group to look at. And when we talk about systems, what we're talking about is applicant-facing systems that were used to facilitate the application submission and communications between the ICANN operational staff and the applicants sort of throughout the application process. And there are a few elements to that. One was the TLD application system, or TAS, T-A-S, and that was used to handle application submission, results of the various evaluation procedures where applicants could get the status of that. So that's the financial capability, technical and operational capability evaluation, registry services, and the overall initial evaluation results and so forth. A second system that we're looking at with this group is the customer portal, which was used for questions from the applicants where they could submit and answers from ICANN staff. And other systems that could be discussed by this group include things like digital archery, centralized zone data service, and the application's comments form. So going back to the issue report, it touches on a number of concerns raised by the discussion group, and a lot of that is about usability, it's about user experience, it's about sort of consistency and integration. One of the issues that they raise is about the need for many logins, many different types of interfaces, so that's something that this group can discuss. Specifically with respect to the TAS, the report mentions the challenges associated with applicants logging into the Citrix ZenApp layer, which allows for a browser-agnostic environment, but applicants had to log into that before logging into the TAS, and I guess it was a complicated user experience. The group might also want to discuss the application security glitch that was identified in April 2012, which required taking the application offline. So the discussion group suggested looking into greater security reviews and better user experience testing in the future rounds, subsequent procedures. And while the discussion group did not anticipate policy development work in regards to systems, the working group may want to provide implementation guidance, such as a minimum set of security and infrastructure standards. And I just also wanted to mention that the program review document has quite a bit as well on this topic, and I'll just pop that link into the chat, but that's something that the group might also want to take a look at because there's quite a bit of material there as well. And I can also go into the communications background, or we can pause there, and I'll let you talk a bit about systems, whatever you prefer.
Thank you, Emily. Yes, let's pause here. I note that there's been a few comments in the chat. John Nevin has noted that the systems should be safe and secure, avoiding glitches and data breaches that we have had in the past. And then Jeff Newman also noted, for instance, we may recommend better usability, ability to copy applications, ability to do non-ASCII. And then John noted just a better user experience. I think those are all great recommendations or input. As Jeff Newman also noted earlier in the chat, that the systems issue is not really policy, but more implementation, but it is part of the subsequent procedures. And so we're just looking on ways that you think would be a benefit to improve, make for a better experience for everyone during the next application window. Does anyone have additional feedback outside of what we've already seen in the chat? several people typing. Don't be shy. Raise your hand. Jeff has noted that perhaps for the next call we can summarize ICANN staff recommendations, and if they make sense, just sign off on them. And then Donna noted that recommendations should be high level and not in the weeds. And I see Donna, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. Donna Austin from Newstar. I think we also should take into consideration the fact that we've moved on quite considerably on this, and that there has been quite a bit of work done by Christine and her team in, you know, redeveloping portals and things like that. So I think it has moved on significantly. So I think the best that we can do on this is maybe some high-level recommendations that go to a better user experience, and note that, you know, there is work, significant work that's been done on this as a result of, you know, some of these concerns that were raised some time ago. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Donna. And Jeff, I see you have your hand up.
Thanks. This is Jeff Newman. I think if we get that summary from staff, I think, and then we agree when, or it seems to make sense to us, I think that would be a good thing. I don't want to, the reason I don't want to just say, like, high level, be great to have usability kinds of recommendations is that I've participated in the last, God knows, three, four rounds, whatever they've had. And each time they've always had an application system that has been only ASCII. It could only be one type of font. You couldn't have, like rich text or HTML format. You couldn't even have links in there. There were just some basic things that would have made our lives a lot easier. And if we can make those recommendations, whether, you know, accepted or not by ICANN staff or the board, I think it's good to make those, because if we don't, we're going to end up with, and I hear Donna saying that systems have gotten better, and that's true. The systems for customer support have gotten better, and, you know, for interacting with ICANN, but I'm not sure there's been any changes to the application system that they had the last time. So I think if there's some things we can give them guidance on, for those of us that entered lots of applications or even one application, it was not a very intuitive system and was extremely difficult. I think there were problems with saving your application where at first you couldn't even save. You had to do everything at once. Then I think they fixed that, but you still had problems where the system would time out, and if you didn't save it, you'd be stuck. So I know that's a little bit in the weeds, but to the extent that, again, I think these were recommendations from ICANN staff as well. To the extent we could summarize it and just kind of go, yeah, we agree with all those, they make sense. I think that's actually helpful. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. Donna, you have your hand up again?
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. Thanks, Donna Austin from Newstar. So I don't disagree with Jeff. It's helpful to have those kind of recommendations. But I think we need to balance that with the needs of those that have to evaluate the applications at the end of the day, because I think if you start to have too many applications that are done in different ways, then it makes it hard for the evaluators and the administration of the applications as well. So to the extent that, you know, you can provide the kind of things that Jeff was suggesting, that's helpful, but let's make sure we balance that against the requirements of those that ultimately have to evaluate the applications at the end of the day and make that as streamlined as possible. You know, you don't want to have to be trying to undo a PDF document to get it into a format that's more that is more uniform for the evaluator. So I think we have to balance those two things as well. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Donna. This is Sarah Pocky again for the record. So it seems like we are at a good place on this discussion and have a good idea of what we need from staff. Does anyone else have any further input or conversation before we continue on to communications? We'll make sure that we put all of this in a follow-up email and get it to Lola so that everyone can see what's been discussed. Okay, great. I see a few people chatting, writing in the chat. Okay, yes, so let's go on to communications. And so here, once again, I've provided a very brief background just for visual to keep in mind what we are looking at discussing and our goals. But I'm going to ask staff, again, to provide the flavor in context of this topic. Emily?
Thanks, Sarah. This is Emily from staff. So this is another topic area that's sort of less about policy development towards implementation guidance from the group. And the foundation started with is implementation guideline C, which ICANN will provide frequent communications with applicants and the public, including comment forums. And there's sort of three pieces of communications that the group may want to look at. The first one is the 2011 communications plan that ICANN developed to increase global awareness of the major changes associated with the new GTLD program, and that's not just applicants, but also a broader audience. And I'm just going to pop that document into the chat in case anyone wants to reference it. One moment. And the second one is communications between applicants and ICANN, primarily supported through the customer portal, but also through things like webinars, roadshows, and sessions held at ICANN meetings. And then the third item that may be considered is the application comments forum, which was created to collect public comments. And on the topic of communications, the discussion group raised a number of concerns. One is whether outreach activities, and in particular webinars for applicants, did enough to distribute information about the program. One of the questions about the customer portal was whether the responses were adequate, consistent, and timely enough. A third question to consider is whether there was sufficient outreach to developing countries to raise awareness about the program, and this is very much linked to the topic of support for applicants from developing countries, so it should be considered in conjunction with that topic if the group wants to talk about it under communications. One of the suggestions from the discussion group was that the working group could ask GDD whether there are statistics about the ability to achieve service level agreements and any other metrics that might be able to help the PDP working group understand the work that was completed and the success of communications, and also helping to understand what elements of the program may have triggered customer support cases and a need for additional clarification. Potential next steps for this group. The discussion group didn't anticipate the need for policy development, but this working group may want to provide implementation guidance on a range of topics related to communications, for example, communications methods, goals for communications, criteria for measuring success of communications, target groups to reach out to, or specific sectors that might be targeted as well. So I hope that helps for background, and please feel free to ask any clarifying questions. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Emily. And so I note here, I think we've sort of touched on this before regarding having a database that is easily searchable. I think we went into this discussion about being an item that would be of use during the application process discussion that we had. So I think that maybe we have some overlap here, that it would also help with communications in providing a knowledge base. Does anyone else have any thoughts regarding what you would feel would be success criteria or goals for the communications or other means of improving the user experience? See, Phil is typing. Donna, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Sarah. Donna Austin. I think just for information of this group is that I think this is another area where things improved over time. And once the customer or client service center was put in place and is, you know, things are now running a lot smoother. And I just also wanted to bring to people's attention that the registry stakeholder group did have a working group that had an ongoing dialogue with the GDG that, you know, related to communications and improving efficiencies into the way that, you know, things were being resolved. I think Yasmin, who's on this call, led that effort. So I don't know, I could certainly find out where that information is and whether we can make it available to this group. But just to note that the registry stakeholder group did have ongoing dialogue with the GDD probably for over a 12-month period to try to improve some of these communication issues that have been identified here.
Okay, great. Donna, thank you so much for that information. And I see that Jeff has agreed with you in the chat on communications after the applications were submitted. But he said that someone needs to go through the application knowledge database and clean that up. And then Donna has, Krista has said that perhaps we can pull some metrics out of there. And then Jeff noted because communications during the application phase was not the greatest. And it looks like Emily is going to have staff provide a summary of these recommendations as well on the next call, which would be very helpful. Thank you, Emily. I see a few more people are typing in the chat. Wonderful. Jeff, you have your hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. So this is Jeff Newman. I was going to type, but I figured it would take me too long to type. Yeah, I totally agree with Donna. There was, for after the applications were submitted, they greatly improved it through Yasmin's work and others on the registry. But that said, during the application phase, ICANN would issue things, advisories, and they would post them on their website. Not everybody necessarily got those advisories. Of course, ICANN didn't know who to send those advisories to because they didn't know who the applicants were going to be. So we have to think of a better mechanism, maybe like a subscription basis that's not disclosed who the subscribers are, but some way to get the advisories out that ICANN had issued during the application phase. So I think there were, for example, there were questions on the COI at many different points, and ICANN would then issue an advisory because of the equal access of information. And, you know, there was just some of us that were working for applicants obviously knew how to get those, but if you didn't have a consultant or weren't looking at the ICANN pages every single day, you wouldn't necessarily get those updates. So I think a process whereby ICANN could communicate with those people that, I guess, subscribe to whatever service to be able to get those updates, because those were not rolled out in a very efficient manner. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. This is Sarah Bakke again, for the record. So I think we are at a good stopping place on this topic for discussion. I see we're getting close to the top of the hour. Krista, were you wanting to touch on accreditation at all? Or do you want to hold that off until the next meeting and we just go to any other business? Okay. Jeff, I see your hand is up again. Do you want to add something?
Yeah, I mean, if you want me to give a little update, I could do that on this topic.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, so as many of you know, ICANN had issued a call out for volunteers for a group that would, amongst other things, talk about a registry service provider. I can't remember if they called it accreditation or certification process. I believe the volunteers for that, either the deadline for volunteers expired last Friday or it does this Friday. I think that's a little bit in limbo now as far as what that group is going to do or even if there's going to be a group. Trying to get updated information on what issues, if there is a group, what issues that group would do. If there's no group, then, you know, what should we take on? So I'll give a more thorough update next call on, or maybe even by email, on what this group should be doing on this topic, if anything, so as to make sure that we're addressing the policy issues that we've been asked to address.
Perfect. Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate that update. We have 1 minute left. Does anyone have any other business that they would like to discuss? Our next meeting will take place on February 14th at 3 UTC. Any hands? Any comments?
Hi, Sarah. It's Krista. Maybe one comment we can throw out to everyone is how to increase the responses on the email list. Is it useful? Is it not? Or how we can make it more productive for everyone? So if anyone has any ideas now on the call or even you can email us, but it's trying to get some momentum going there and we're having some difficulty there. So thank you.
Yes, that definitely would be helpful. Thank you, Krista. So we are at the top of the hour. I'm not seeing any more hands, and so I think we can call it a day on this discussion. So staff, if you'd like to stop the recording, and I will thank everyone for their participation and attendance today. We very much appreciate it. Thank you all.